This is Robert Martellacci, the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's learning and technology e-magazine. I have the good fortune of having a Mindshare Learning moment here at the Trillium Lakelands District School Board in beautiful Lindsay, Ontario, with Larry Hope, the district director at CEO of the district, and along with his colleague, Catherine McIver, who is the superintendent of specialized services, recently promoted. Congratulations. And we're having a discussion around innovation and transformation and what really is making a difference in the classrooms today as it relates to technology. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having us, Robert.
And Catherine.
Thank you.
So we've had some great conversation around challenges and opportunities around transformation and 21st century learning, if I can use that cliche term that we love and hate today. But it really is about a mindset and thinking differently and doing things differently and allowing the grassroots to what's happening in the trenches to permeate and giving them some latitude.
Yeah, really, I think we agree that it's a love-hate relationship with the term 21st century learning, partially because none of us seems to be able to define this term in a way that speaks to everyone who uses the term. For us, we look at it not just in terms of the technology and the tools that we're using in our classrooms, but also the skills that our teachers are supporting within our student body. We look at it as a way of helping our learners not only acquire information but create knowledge as well, and to create understanding of the things that we seek to cover in our curriculum and beyond the curriculum. I think for us it's also a little bit about a struggle between the term as it relates to people's perceptions around the technology and the tools and the mindset around those softer skills that are out there that we continue to hear, for example, employers talking about our students needing when they come into the workforce. Those things like collaboration and the ability to problem solve and the ability to discover knowledge and information on their own. And so for us, much of the success that we've had in Trillium Lakelands District School Board has come from, as you said a few moments ago, Robert, the trenches, where our teachers have made observations about the way in which kids learn, the way in which kids interact with one another, and the way in which kids communicate with one another and with the adults in their world. For us, we have created conditions in our district where we have allowed those grassroots individuals to come to us to say, I have an idea that I would like to pursue further. Sometimes it relates directly to a tool or a piece of technology. Other times it relates directly to the way in which the tool is used. Other times it might relate specifically to a skill that we would like our young people to acquire. And so for us, it's been about enabling and empowering and supporting those folks when they come to us with those ideas. Often it is about making resources available to them. Sometimes it's about making financial resources or hardware or software available to them. Other times it's also about helping them come to an inquiry type of question about what it is they seek to understand more about or learn more from.
Fascinating. Now, you are in a smaller size district. We talked earlier about the challenges and opportunities there between a big city district, small city district. Do you want to perhaps touch on that and some of the impact that you've been able to make with teachers and students around pedagogy and learning?
I think there are several aspects of this that need to be taken into consideration. And I don't think it really matters all that much whether it's a small district, a medium district, or a large district. I think a lot of these things are tied to what I would call an economy of scale, if you will. A small district may face challenges around capacity with how many people they have available to support the implementation or the learning. A large district may have challenges around financial resources to purchase enough of the technology, or struggling with the ability to be able to bring people together in a meaningful way that allows them to share their learning and share the experiences they have. I think the underlying piece of all of this, however, has got to be around philosophy. What are our expectations for moving the system along and making these things accessible to people, making sure that what it is we're doing with 21st century learning, to use the term, supports allowing our children, our students to be, or to have access to the curriculum. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about students with special needs, whether we're talking about the general student population, or whether we're talking about very specific avenues that we wish to pursue. It really does, I think, boil down to how much emphasis are we going to put on this, and then what are the tools and supports that we're going to put in place or be able to put in place to support what it is we want to do.
Absolutely. Now, we talked earlier about BYOD, and you had a view on that, and perhaps we can discuss what that means to districts and some of the challenges and opportunities around that.
You know, from my perspective, I think BYOD sometimes can be a bit of a misnomer in that we go to great lengths to make these things available in our schools, whether they be guest networks or whether they be the ability to access information during the school day. And then sometimes I think it falls down when people don't understand the full potential and power that BYOD brings to a classroom. You know, we still hear examples of instances where people say, well, all the cell phones have to go in a little box at the beginning of the class. We see signs up at schools that say no cell phones allowed in classrooms. That is, frankly, the device that our young people are coming to school with when we talk about BYOD. Yes, many of them will have their own laptops. Yes, many of them will have tablets. But quite frankly, most of them are reliant and dependent upon their telephones as the device that they choose to use. It's important, I think, for us to do a better job of helping all of the people in our schools, and that means parents and teachers and support staff, understand that while there may be a feeling of lack of control or loss of power when we open the world in this way, really, this is a very powerful tool that we can use to support our students as they seek to acquire knowledge and understanding of the curriculum and all of those things. It is new ground for many people. It is and can be a very scary world for us to go into, because those inevitable things will happen from time to time where somebody goes somewhere they shouldn't have gone, or they access something they shouldn't have accessed. But really, rather than using that as an excuse not to do these things, we should be saying, what do we learn from this?
You call that a teaching moment.
It's a teaching moment. And how do we use it as a teaching moment, more importantly?
Right.
Our first instinct is often to address it in a way that is punitive, whereas it actually should be seen as, okay, this happened. What have we all learned from this? And what will we do differently next time when we encounter this?
We've entered an era where I'd like to say, one of the most exciting times to be in education, with the promise of technology and innovation and change. We talked earlier, and you had some good advice around the whole challenge around interoperability and how the companies are developing products that maybe are missing the mark. Could we touch on that for a moment, around how important that is? And you've had some success with some products with apps and mobile devices.
And I think we see it the most by what our staff want to use and what our students want to use. And they tell us what is interacting well and what is not. We've had lots of success with using iPads because of some of the built-in accessibility features. So it's not about needing another piece of software or needing another piece of hardware in order to make it work effectively for students with special needs or for any student in the classroom. It's built in. Our interactive aspects of using sound fields with smart boards, with other technology, being able to connect laptops, iPads to our smart boards, and, you know, having things talk to each other makes a big difference, and that's where we start to see things get traction, and teachers and students both understanding, you know, here's how this tool can work for me, and here's how it's going to augment our learning.
Let's focus in on the sound field for a moment, because that's an area where you've had some really good success. Perhaps we can talk about the impact and the standardization that you've gone through because of the value that teachers have had. And there's a lesson there for the industry to really understand the value of their solutions and the interoperability with a multitude of products and layering on that, for example. Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the front row from a universal design, we know that for some kids need to have that level of articulation and hearing loss for a variety of different reasons. We use the sound fields. We can have those things interact really well with lots of different learning in the classroom. But what we hear most is when teachers are saying, okay, how else can I use this? How can I do a podcast using the sound fields we already have in place? We're looking at how can we use these sound fields for things like mass notification purposes within our buildings. So that universality makes it very appealing, I think, from a system perspective, but also from a teaching perspective as well.
I think the fact that our teachers have repeatedly told us that they see benefit in their classroom for their students and overall accessibility to the curriculum and accessibility to the teaching and learning that's going on in the classroom, in and of itself is a compelling, mm-hmm. I think, feature of what we've done with sound fields in this district. We repeatedly hear stories like, my students remind me when I don't put my microphone on in the morning.
Right.
My students have come to expect that they will use a microphone when they are sharing their thoughts and experiences with their classmates. When we hear teachers say things to us like, at the end of the school day, I don't feel the same level of fatigue, or vocal fatigue in particular, but fatigue in general, those factors, I think, are pretty compelling reasons for us to continue to support the implementation of sound fields in particular. We also know that at any given time, there will be students in every single classroom who are suffering from an undiagnosed hearing issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that's
really
very common, isn't it?
It's very common. In fact, far more common, I think, than we believe and know. And so in the absence of formal diagnosis of a hearing loss, this for us, again, is a compelling mm-hmm. reason for us to have gone down this road.
So the value of investment in that case, it's really paying off.
It certainly is. And given the level of oral interaction that takes place in a classroom on a daily basis,
right.
it's very important that our students and our staff mm-hmm. not miss any of that.
And that still is the primary mode of communication, isn't it?
Oral communication.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other thoughts to add to that aspect?
I think it's our kids are our early adopters. I mean, they really are the ones that are showing us what's working for them. They're very quick to understand the interactiveness. We've had success with bringing teachers and students together to do training together. And it's very interesting to watch the teachers learn from the students and what a great opportunity that is. And we've had a few what I would call aha moments from our staff that say, wow, look at this. You know, what our students can give back to us in the classroom as well.
That's really innovative to engage the students in that process. And that really speaks to your innovative spirit and maybe even 21st century learning.
If you want to call it that.
Sure. Any final thoughts to share for back to school? You're good.
Just that we wish everybody a great year, as always, and we look forward to creativity and innovation at the grassroots level. Know that we will continue to see continued success and look forward to a great year.
Thank you so much, Larry and Catherine. That was Larry Hope, Director of the NCO of the Trillium Lakelands District School Board here in beautiful Lindsay, Ontario, and Catherine McIver, the newly minted Superintendent of Special Services. My name is Robert Martellacci of the Mindshare Learning Report, and until next time, keep the learning curve steep.